Inside Vegas is presented by MyBookie.ag. MyBookie.ag is the official online sportsbook of the Inside Vegas podcast, as well as the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Use promo code SGP50 to receive a 50% deposit bonus today. Inside Vegas is also brought to you by Oddshark. Oddshark has the latest betting trends available nowhere else, as well as betting picks from their supercomputer. Check out all of their quality content and betting trends at oddshark.com. Yo, 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 it's your boy CP here with another greatest and latest installment of Inside Vegas podcast. It's going to take you into a look all things social media and Las Vegas handicapping. So, like I said before, the first couple episodes of this podcast were the introduction, Super Bowl props, and Super Bowl reaction. But this podcast is going to be getting back to what it was created for, which is, again, taking a look at things from social media, how social media has changed landscapes of sports handicapping, as well as Las Vegas personalities and things like that. So today I'm going to be joined by John Campbell of Oddshark. I'm sure you guys have all heard the podcast he's done with Sean and Ryan lately, his picks and all that stuff that are on Oddshark. But today I'm going to have John on for a bit of a different reason, different aspect. What I want to do today is take a look at somewhat of a broad look at sports media and specifically how to break into the field. John's an analyst for Oddshark, like I said, and he's really one of the premier content providers in this industry. And one question that I get among many in my DMs basically daily is how people can get started creating content and work for some of these outlets like Oddshark, like creating content for companies like Covers or ESPN Chalk, Sportsline for CBS, or even, you know, written blogs like Sports Insights, all that stuff. So that's what we're going to detail today for anyone that's basically looking to kind of get started in the sports handicapping content world. But before we do that, let's talk about MyBookie.ag. The Inside Vegas podcast is presented by MyBookie.ag. MyBookie.ag is the official online sportsbook of Inside Vegas and the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. As always, use promo code SGP50 to receive a 50% deposit bonus today. We're also brought to you by Oddshark. They have the latest betting trends available nowhere else, as well as betting picks from their supercomputer. Check out all their picks at oddshark.com. And now joining me on the phone is the one and only Johnny Oddshark, as they say, John Campbell, friend of the podcast, friend of Sports Gambling Podcast, especially with the new kind of joint venture with Oddshark coming on to somewhat sponsor Sports Gambling Podcast and do some business. So welcome on, John. How are you?
Hey, good, Christian. Thanks for having me, man.
How is the Great White North this time of year, buddy? Cold? What's going on?
It's cold. We're freezing our butts off right now. So, yeah, a little bit longer to go, another month or so.
So for anyone that's not familiar with all the great content and the great work that John does, John, what is your official title at Oddshark? We'll start there for what your current role is.
Sports analyst is my title. But yeah, I handle a lot of different sports betting content and all our media appearances and that sort of thing.
Right. And again, everything can be found on Twitter at Johnny Oddshark, or again on the Oddshark website, which is www.oddshark.com. So again, as I touched on leading into this interview, the theme of this particular piece and this particular podcast is basically how to break into sports handicapping from a media perspective. Some of the questions I get almost on a daily basis in my DMs, and I'm sure John can attest to this, is, you know, how do I break into this field? Because in some ways, I mean, yes, it's ever growing, it's ever booming, but it's still almost in its infancy. Obviously, it's come so far, but it's still almost a niche market. There's not, you know, sports handicapping media isn't, you know, a major in college, as you say, that you can kind of take on. So let's just start basically from the beginning, John, and kind of how you got to the point that you are today.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I always wanted to do something in sports, and I love media and communications and that sort of thing. So I took journalism in university, as we call it up here, and I got a Bachelor of Journalism degree here. And I just kind of assumed I'd be covering a beat in sports, but there was a small company here locally that was just getting going called Covers, and they
little shop. Don't know if you heard of it.
Yeah, a little shop. And it really was that we were upstairs in a shopping mall. I think I was the 12th person hired, and it caught my eye, and I went in and kind of met them and developed a bit of a relationship, and they hired me right out of school. And very quickly I became the editor there, and just was sort of given the reins to say, here you go, you take us where you want to go. Let's figure out a path of how to build some editorial that people would want to consume. And at the time, this was 16 years ago, I guess, it was still really new. There weren't a ton of entities on the internet where people were going to on a regular basis for their sports betting information. So we're really just feeling it out, and it was really cool for me because I was like a deer in the headlights in some senses, but in another sense, I knew nobody had really figured this thing out yet. So I just kind of dug in and worked really hard and eventually built an editorial following for all of our editorial content. I think we're getting like 10,000 page views a month or something on the editorial front when I started.
Which is so much for back then, man. That's awesome. I mean, especially 2002, 2003 that's before DFS. People have to realize before all these things that kind of took off. So for you to get that, and again, not to sound like I'm all over you, but that's pretty amazing for when you think back to where sports gambling and sports gambling media was back then.
Yeah, for sure. And it had developed a little bit of a name, Covers, and the company was growing and they had some partnerships, and the web traffic was bigger than that. But that was just the editorial side of things. And by the time I left, we were up over 4 million a month or so. And it was just found a lot of great people along the way that bought in as much as I did and really built a pretty cool editorial product there that became pretty well known. And a couple years ago, I'd been there 14 years, and it was time for a change. And luckily, Oddshark took me on, and just it's been an awesome 2 years. It's just a fantastic company to work for, great people, and just having a blast. And just sitting here talking about it, man, I don't think about it too much how I got here and how it all happened. But it's pretty cool. It's been a fun roller coaster.
Yeah, that's the thing. You never have time to kind of sit back and realize how you got to the points you're at. I mean, even with me, I've only been kind of doing content full time for, maybe a year now with Sports Gambling Podcast. I mean, this podcast is in its fourth episode. So this stuff is especially in its infancy to me. And that's, again, why I wanted to have you on, just because people don't realize how long you've really been in this industry. So I think that's important. But when you talked about, starting from the beginning and going to college, do you think in today's age, and again, I know you're in Canada, which is maybe looked at a little bit different in the United States, but do you think that it's absolutely imperative that somebody do go to college to pursue a journalism degree or a sports journalism degree for these bigger companies to kind of even look at somebody?
No, I don't think it is. I think it depends on the person. And with me, one of the things I loved about it, I didn't love taking journalism in university, but I did like it was a small liberal arts college, and I did like that sort of thing. And it really helped me to think in a different way and grow. And that was the most important part, because when I started in the workforce, everything that I learned was basically now obsolete. Like they right. weren't preparing me for the internet, and we really didn't. No. So I kind of loved that I now had this new thing. I could throw out all those rules that they've been living by for all these decades and have been having a lot of success with in them, because I didn't necessarily buy into them. But it did teach me to think in a different way. I think that's what my degree gave me. So it was really important for me, because I was kind of a jockey kind of guy out of high school that thought I was a lot smarter than I was. And that really helped blow up my mind and help me think in a different way. I don't think everybody has to do that. I think some people are just smarter than I am coming out of school and that sort of thing. And I think if you can really dig in and have an open mind and just work your butt off. I mean, the old cliches are true, but if you are willing to work really, really hard, that's going to overcome a lot.
Yeah, completely. And speaking to that, that's why I brought this question up, because you did go to college, and this is something when I originally moved to Las Vegas, I was going to go back to college, not back to school, but I was going to go to school for the first time at 27 for sports journalism at UNLV. And it's, again, I go back to, you know, kind of where my road took me as I knew that I wanted to bet on sports professionally and bet on it full time. And I didn't think that I could do that and while concentrating on Algebra 1, you know, or history of all these things, no matter if I could take classes online or if I couldn't. And so that path that I thought I was going to go down didn't really work out the way that I wanted to, but yet I'm still, you know, in this position of exposure and where I am now. But I just wanted people to, you know, agree. I don't think that in today's day and age, you have to go to college. And I just wanted to see kind of somebody's take on where that was. But how long did it take you, or did you find covers, or did they find you coming out of university?
I found covers. I had a whole plan here, and I had to do a fourth year project on a media issue. And when I stumbled across them, I was like, oh, well, why don't I check these guys out? And if this goes well, maybe they'll let me have an internship, which they did. And then maybe they'll hire me after that, which they did. So it kind of all worked out perfectly. And I guess you could say I bet on them a little bit having some success, and they bet on me too. And so I found them. And just kind of got in and built a relationship, and that's true too. I mean, how much you can build a relationship and people are willing to take a chance on you, and we were just all in it together. We were just really fighting to make a name and build something great in the space we were in. But I agree with you. I don't think you need a degree or anything like that. And what I didn't have, I had the journalism side of it. I had the I had the degree side of it. And I loved sports, and I was really passionate about following sports, but I didn't have the sports betting side of things when I first came in. So when I first started, I was really learning, you know, other than understanding what a point spread was and the over-under, I really didn't know that much about sports betting. So that's what I was missing, and that's what I really had to dig into and learn and, get good at. And I think if you have that, I think a lot of people have that passion. They bring the sports betting knowledge and experience and all that kind of stuff, and it's learning the other side of things, and there's really no set path right now. There's new mediums coming out all the time, different ways you can connect with people, and I think people in the real world should be teaching universities what's going on,
right? Because, I agree,
there's no set path, and I embrace that. I still embrace that. I think you have to, and it's just learning all the time and trying different things.
I completely agree, man. I seriously couldn't agree more, especially, which leads me into kind of where I want to take this next, which is social media. Because, you know, when I first started kind of on quote unquote gambling Twitter or sports gambling podcast, you know, I always talk about my story with getting involved with SGP and this platform and kind of getting to the point where I am now of being their editor and the head content guy for all their written stuff and this podcast. Like, I was a fan, and all I did was interact with them. We started playing like fantasy games together, and eventually their fantasy guy kind of bowed out. And this was probably, you know, 2-3 years ago. And obviously our relationship's grown into what it is now. But what do you think the impact is on social media, kind of geared towards the job, I don't want to call it the job market, but, you know, going from posting free for exposure into kind of how these companies or what kind of people, if they want to do their own thing and all that type of stuff, kind of change the game? Because again, when you talk about, you know, you back in 2002, 2003, the path to ever get into journalism was you go to school, you know, you intern, you work at, you know, a newspaper, or, you know, with the kind of the boom of the internet, you know, these type places now. But what do you, how do you think kind of social media or these online platforms like Media or ESPN Chalk, Covers, Odd Chalk, all these places has kind of changed?
It's given the individual a platform that didn't exist before. Like you said, before you had to go through another media entity and build your name through them. But you see so many people now that are building good followings and reputations and delivering great information, just starting from scratch on social platforms. And I think Twitter is the most important one in sports betting in terms of information, in terms of the people on there. You have to really filter your way.
Just because it's so quick, do you think that Twitter is the most important?
Because it's so quick, and because you can filter it and just kind of make it your own. You can customize it to what you need. So you can find so many people if you're patient and you dig. You find the following that you need, or you find the list that you need, and that sort of thing to give you the information you want. And if it's not reliable, you cut it out. And if it's not reliable, pretty quickly people on Twitter will take care of that. And people kind of fall by the wayside. So you figure out over time who their reliable information is coming from, who you can depend on, and you get it quickly, yes, and up to speed, up to date as the day goes on and all that sort of thing. Live video is becoming more and more important in there too. So, and it's also such a quick way to socially interact. I don't think Facebook is geared quite the same way that Twitter is, but it almost is eliminating a lot of the forums. The forums used to be the really big deal in the industry. That's where you had to go to talk to people and figure out information. But they can be difficult. And, I think Twitter has sort of replaced those. It's just been such a massive influence and such a helpful tool for me in sports betting.
Of course. And were you involved in kind of, because basically whenever you talk about forums, the one that that people always will bring up to this day is Covers. And it's the Covers forums, which is kind of, it's been the standard in those type of settings forever. And if anyone doesn't know, that's only on social media or only on Twitter. I guess it'd be better to hear it from you, but can you just kind of give a brief overview of what forums are, what kind of how they got started, and if you had anything to do with kind of bringing them to the forefront when you were back at Covers in the beginning?
Yeah, I mean, if you're in your early 20s out there listening, you're probably going, huh?
Yeah.
Like, well, I've heard of those before, but it's almost, I don't know, almost like a Reddit is today. It was just a community where people could go.
It's like a big message board, basically.
Exactly, where people could go who were like-minded and talk about all sorts of topics, and they're usually filtered down into whatever sport or topic you wanted to talk about, and it just grew from there. And the one challenge with forums, I think, over time was they became clicky. People became aggressive in them and that sort of thing, whereas Twitter it just feels more open. I think it feels much easier just to start on Twitter and to block people or mute people that are causing you issues, and it's not in a confined space. It's much more open. But for a long time, forums were a vital part of your handicapping. If you were a serious handicapper, it's where people would go to talk about games. And I it's almost hard to imagine that people handicap games a different way. Like they used to have to, the old wise guys, they used to have to go down and meet at the sports book or meet at a coffee shop, once a week. And there was a limited number of people you could network with. So this really blew everything wide open. The traffic was insane in those forums.
Did you have anything to do with kind of bringing or, creating those forums back in the day? Or was that kind of more of that, were there specific people that were brought in to kind of handle those and while you did the editing and all that?
I really stayed out of the forums. It was a bit of a jungle in there. My role was to grow the editorial and build that voice and build that content. So that's where I was really focused. I'd poke my head in and get some information from time to time and things like that and see what was going on. But I really stayed out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So transitioning over from, so you left Covers and moved over to Oddshark. So if you just kind of talk about how basically, it's rare that you find somebody that's worked within two of the biggest platforms within media when it comes to sports handicapping. So I wanted to kind of, again, not to say there's anything, better than one or the other. Obviously you're at one employer now and used to be at another, but is there any kind of the differences, but just kind of what took you away from Covers and brought you over to Oddshark?
Well, it's I'm someone who kind of is always looking to challenge and grow and do all that sort of thing. And 14 years, they were 14 wonderful years. It was just a really great experience. I developed, I just got so much experience and there while I was there. But 14 years, it was time to try something new. And the company had sold to Grace Note and the Tribune Group at the time, and it was kind of a window for me to poke my head out around there and get a fresh start and see what was going on. So it was really just a time to do something new. And at the time, I was managing a lot. I was driving editorial strategy, and Oddshark, I just heard so many great things about it and had seen all the great work that they were doing. So when I met with them, I just right away wanted to be a part of it. And my role changed a little bit, where I'm a sports analyst now. I'm in front of the camera or on air a lot more, and really digging back into the sports again. I'm still looking for new ways to make great content and all that sort of thing, but now I'm building my own sort of personality and entity out there for the Oddshark brand. And so it's a lot of fun. So I'm back heavily involved in the betting day-to-day sports side of things again. And it's just such a fantastic company that has the mentality I'm looking for. It's in that growth, hyper growth sort of mode and everything going well and people looking to try new things and that sort of thing. It reminds me a little bit of what it was at Covers in the early days, but these guys just have so many good things going, and it's just such a fun thing to be a part of.
For sure. And I'm glad you brought up video, because that's something I want to talk about too, is being diverse and the more things that you can do within media, the better off you're going to be. Again, I always just try to, when I started this again, like now I'm doing written stuff, I'm doing podcasting. I haven't done video, but again, that's what I want to talk about, is how important is it for you to be diverse? Or do you think it is to focus in on one thing you're really, really good at? Like, for instance, if somebody's a phenomenal writer and they can create great sports handicapping content writing, but they fumble around, on video, or they have, they're not confident enough to be on video and have people kind of put themselves out there like that. Do you think that people can still kind of survive only doing one thing? Do you think that video is the future? Do you think that written content will always be the king? Or where do you kind of see, the diversity or different avenues of media kind of going, and which one do you think right now is kind of king?
I think that's a tough question, which one is king, but I agree that I would say that you find the one you are best at. Some people can be good at all of them. I try to be good at all of them. I'm still learning it every day. I think I'll always feel that way.
Right.
So, but I think you can do just one. I think there are guys in the industry that write more than anything, and that's what they're good at, and they do that. I think there are guys on radio who are fantastic and do that really well. And I think there are guys on video that do really well. It depends what your audience wants, and it depends what you can deliver on. So I really believe in trying to be present and mindful and doing one thing well at a time. So I've learned the hard way over the years that if you try to do every single thing at the top level, it's probably not going to work out.
Get burnt out.
For sure. You get burnt out, and you really, you can't compete at the highest level with the very best with every single thing. So I think it starts with something that you're really good at. I think for me, the live video and Periscope was something I really branched out on this year and had some success with. Every time I'm on air, I feel like I learn a little bit, and if I'm doing this another 10 or 20 years, I feel like I'm still going to feel that way. But you can kind of find the medium for you and really develop a following. Some people are only on Twitter and you don't even know their names, but they're trustworthy and they build great content and they do all that sort of thing. So I don't think you have to do a whole bunch of different things. And I think the user should come to recognize you for something. It's like, here's Johnny Oddshark. He's on radio. I like him in this spot with this guy or on this podcast or that sort of thing. So I think you should be really good at one thing, and I wouldn't advise trying to do everything.
Yeah, and that's, I'm glad you brought this up when you said people kind of posting under aliases or things like that. This has always been fascinating to me. When I first joined Twitter, I had no idea that people didn't use just their first and last name. Like, I thought it was just like Facebook. Like, you don't see somebody on Facebook going by, King capper or millionaire. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You don't see some of these fucking, like, these weird kind of aliases and things like that. And I always didn't really, again, I wanted to kind of go down the path that you did of being kind of, you know, I wanted to create content for pertinent outlets, if not do my own thing and kind of, you know, build my own, whatever mm-hmm. it was, my, you know, hashtag brand. But mm-hmm. what do you think it's better for somebody to kind of go the alias route and kind of be somewhat protected? And I know this kind of splits in two different areas because some people don't want to post pics and things like that under their real name, mm-hmm. which again, you know, handicapping and posting social media or not social media, but media and kind of doing the things that you do are they go lockstep. Absolutely. But they're a little bit different. So do you think it's important for somebody to always use their real name if they're looking to break into this industry or do it as an alias?
Well, it depends how public and what you want to do. And, I take some pride now, I guess before I hadn't thought about it, but I take some pride now in the fact that I've always used my real name. I've always used my real identity in the sports betting industry. And I've never felt any reason not to do that. And I just from a transparency and credibility standpoint, I hope that helps me a little bit. And, you know, I always wanted to build content and be known out there. And you know, now I certainly want my face out there as much as possible just to represent the brand and help people out in sports betting. So I think it's certainly important for me. Certainly what bothers me the most is when people aren't giving great information and they're hiding behind a false identity or people are being trolls and going out and being negative. I mean, if you can handle not being negative and picking fights with people and doing all that crap. I just find that stuff so spineless when you're going out there and looking for it when nobody knows who you are. You're not putting your name or your reputation behind what you're saying, and it's mostly just to stir up stuff. So I think you can do it, and I think there's some good people out there that are providing really good information that just aren't comfortable because they have other jobs and they're worried about the way people are going to judge them because of sports betting. And I totally get that. I just think if you're going to do that, you have to stay positive. You can't be picking fights. You have to give good information.
And that's the thing, right? To me, it comes down to you're basically when I'm trying to think how I want to word this, but you're trying to make yourself a brand. And so to do that, you know, whenever, you know, covers is a kind of a play on words. It's a great name. Odd Shark, same thing. But for people, again, I mean, going over some of kind of the most, quote, I don't want to say famous, but some of the most well-known kind of alias names on social media, you know, people like the Vegas Refund or the White Whale or kind of, we'll see a couple other ones, Sledgehammer, Sandman, Kingpin Picks, guys like those that are very, you know, I mean, those guys have, you know, some of them are Vegas Refunders over 20,000 followers. I think Sandman has 15,000 followers and kind of what they've done. And not to say they don't make content. The White Whale has an awesome podcast called The Deep Dive. He's on Medium. He does a ton of great things. But what those guys have done, and again, I know it's just giving out picks, but they've made a brand for themselves and they've mm-hmm. kind of, and I think that particular avenue works out very well. But again, there's a fine line between making a brand for yourself and again, going out there for the wrong reasons to just kind of hide behind a keyboard. The other thing that I think is kind of a downfall of using an alias or a different name and things like that is once you've built that audience, you know, say somebody has a 30,000 Twitter followers under one of those brand names and now somebody and they're also creating content. If a website comes to them and says, you know, we want to kind of take a look at you or bring you on to create content for us, if they, you know, make the stipulation that you have to use your real name just because that's kind of how mainstream media is, you're going to lose a huge portion of your audience because not lose them, but people aren't going to know who you are. And if you want to kind of convert your audience over, you have to eventually come out with who you actually are and they will see it, you know, kind of when you post mainstream articles and things like that. That's why I always went with my real name was just because, again, I always wanted, I knew the direction I wanted to do, which was kind of semi both, which was kind of bring content, create content, but also kind of go down the picks avenue and handicapping because I think that they do go such lockstep. So those are kind of my takes on the pros and cons of each.
Yeah, for sure. And I think a lot of times, and the guys you mentioned are all great follows and have built great followings because they're credible. They don't, you know, they don't troll. They don't get into those sorts of things. But it's, I mean, sometimes people, they don't have a plan. With you, you had a clear sort of goal, and I did too. I knew what I wanted to do. And it's like all of a sudden they've got 5 or 10,000 or 20,000 followers. And it's like, oh boy, maybe I could monetize this. And then right. It's like, how do I do that? If I might have to build a brand all over again. But so there are challenges with it. But the other gambling Twitter is tough sometimes too. So people don't want to put their real name out there because when you're starting out, it's people can be ferocious out there, and it's tough to take sometimes.
Exactly. And one thing I will say, in today's day and age, I talked about how mainstream media, you know, they're obviously going to kind of want you to use your real name. And that's not true in all cases. I mean, if you look at companies like Barstool or Barstool Sports, I mean, they have Big Cat, PFT Commentator, mm-hmm. KFC. I mean, those aren't, you know, they're kind of a play on their real names and things like that. Like Big Cat, his real name is Dan Katz, or KFC is his initials, or, you know, El Prez. Everyone knows who Dave Portnoy is, but he went by El Presidente for a very long time. So mm-hmm. with the evolution of mainstream media and these, I don't want to say millennial companies because it makes me sound old, but, you know, mm-hmm. these new companies, I mean, it is an avenue. As long as you have a brand and a following, I think that you'll be just fine regardless. It's just, again, it depends on what you want to get out of it. But when you talk about kind of rebranding, or you said, you know, if you have to make a brand for yourself, if you kind of, I don't want to say had to start over, because it's not as if you'd ever have to start over, but if you were just starting out and, you know, you wanted to kind of go down this path in today's day and age, what kind of advice would you give anybody, or where would you tell people to start and kind of, you know, take the first steps into this, be it social media or what?
Yeah, I would say start on Twitter and start betting. I would say learn as much as you possibly can about betting early on, and get on Twitter and listen to what guys are saying and what they're talking about. Try different things. You're going to have to, if you want to really dig in and learn as much as you can about this, it's going to mean betting, and that's probably going to mean losing some money. You can do that while still betting responsibly and to learn this, but you have to dive in from there, because first and foremost, you have to understand what people want before you can then deliver what you want. So that's what I would say is start on Twitter, social media there, and get into betting and just have fun. I mean, I would just be transparent and have fun and say, hey, I'm learning. Help me out. What are the best ways to do it? And if you love it, it'll be something you want to work hard at. I think that is what's lost in a lot of people wanting to break into this industry. It's the same with odds makers. It's the same with the other guys on behind the counter. People think it's a cool job, but I few people until they it do it not. Really
they did, nobody really understands the grind that it is, man.
How much work, exactly. It is so much work. It never stops, and I try to help people year round in different sports, so there's a huge commitment that comes with that. So if you don't love it, you're gonna be miserable. You're gonna be the most miserable person out there. You might as well be digging ditches, because that's what it'll feel like. You have to be passionate about this and just really dig in, because it's all consuming. You have to be watching sports, following social media, betting, learning all the time, and that's tricky to do while also trying to have a life.
Absolutely, bro. People don't understand. I always talk about, you know, again, my time is somewhat split with betting professionally and putting out content. People don't understand like the hours and the, you know, it's like being an isolated stockbroker. It really is. You're, you know, from a betting perspective, you know, again, there's different levels to this. And if you're a recreational bettor and you're just starting out, you're not going to really care about going out at 2 a.m. to get a number that just pops somewhere. It's not worth it. But you talked about, you know, how you can bet responsibly, but that's the only point to learn. I echo those sentiments exactly. And I used to really wanted to get into playing poker, just because I was out here in Vegas. I had a couple of professional poker player guys that I was kind of close with. And they were like, you know, I was like, can you like come to my house, or can we meet at a casino? Can you teach me? And they were like, dude, you don't understand. Like, the only way to learn how to play poker is to mm-hmm. lose playing poker. And I think that the same exact thing holds true for sports betting. But again, we talk about how social media has changed things. And what that has done is, it's allowed the fact that if you're good and if you're talented, the cream will always rise to the top. And when you really think about how far that's come, and again, the whole overall theme of this podcast in general is taking a look at how social media has changed things. And I think that that's one of the biggest reasons is before it, with anything, whether you were a singer, if you were a rapper or whatever it is that you do, it wasn't enough to just be talented. You could have been the best in the world, but if nobody heard you or you didn't get the right people to hear your stuff or read your content, it wasn't going to matter. And, you know, this is, if you go back further and further, I mean, you're talking about, you know, having to physically mail people, you know, samples of your work or your songs or whatever it is that you're into. With social media now, I mean, everything has changed in that as long as you're engaging and you're, you know, talking to people and you're sending DMs, if you're, you know, I always say if you're not being annoying, then you're really probably not trying. And there's a fine line between being, you know, annoying in that you want to learn and, you know, other than trolling people and stuff like that. But with social media, if you're talented, I cannot say this enough, you will be noticed eventually. And it may take a lot longer than you really want. And you may have to write for free for a while. And some of the best people on social media or doing these content pieces are doing it because they're doing it for free because they're in their exposure phase. And I always talk about how there's different phases to this. And one of them is always, I mean, every single person you talk to, whether they're in journalism for sports or they're in it for anything else, they worked for free. And they were as fantasy writers is a huge one. I mean, that space is so overcrowded right now. There's people that are working for free, literally just to get, you know, their foot in the door and everything. And that's people with families because that's kind of their dream. And there's a lot of parallels to the fantasy aspect of it, especially with DFS now in sports handicapping. But again, with social media now, you know, I always talk about networking. So how important do you think networking is? Because I really personally, I think it's absolutely everything.
Yeah, it's huge. It's absolutely huge. And from an information standpoint, from your bets, from in terms of just building connections, like you, one thing about sports betting I found is you never know who's going to be the next, you know, kind of star or media personality in the industry. Like you just don't know. And, you know, you can kind of see the people that work really hard and are committed to it. And so like could be somebody like several times in the industry, it's people I met or started connections with 5 years before, and they become, you know, and then they become media entities in the industry years later. So it's stick with it and just keep working. And it's funny, it can be disheartening sometimes. You feel like you write the best thing or do the best video, that you feel you want to help people with their sports betting. You're like, well, nobody really commented on this or whatever. But you do something else. The bigger you get, the more the better your content seems to be, even though you might have done it a long time ago. But that's just the nature of it. And but keep working at it. And I know how tough it can be, but it's so important to network and build. And because you just never know who's going to pop up next.
It's so true. And again, I don't want to keep going back to my story and things like that, but some of the best people in the world that I've learned the absolute most from, including you, is because of networking. I mean, everybody is a friend of a friend of somebody. You know, people always talk about 6 degrees separation, 7 degrees, whatever it is. But this is such a, I don't want to say close knit, but it's a small world when it comes to sports, gambling, media. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say that everyone knows everybody, but again, if you're good enough, you're going to get noticed. But everybody, it is so much easier to do that if you know somebody. It really is. And everyone knows somebody here. And if you're good and if you're generally a good person, people will try to help you out. And that's why I say that networking is absolutely is everything to me. I wouldn't literally be having this conversation with you on two different levels. One, because I didn't interact and network with the people who ran Sports Gambling Podcast. And two, I wouldn't be having this conversation with you because I didn't know somebody who knew you. You know what I mean? So it's literally everything starts there. And if you're not working for kind of a global company like a Covers, like an Odd Shark, like ESPN Chalk, kind of these outlets, all you have is networking. And so you can build, you know, anybody can sit in their house and make a sports gambling podcast as long as you have somebody to talk to, which is networking. Anyone can write content. That doesn't take anybody. So again, to me, it's the absolute it's kind of at the forefront is kind of what I think is the most absolutely imperative thing that you must do is build a group. You know, start a DM on group DM on Twitter, start a group text, whether it's your friends or whoever it is, because it, again, you never want to stop learning. But that's kind of where I see networking. But not to keep you too long, man, I want to wrap this up. Is there, again, I keep going back to advice for anyone that's trying to look back in the field. Is there anything big, from everything you've learned being in this business for so long that you have now that, you always started just saying, just work hard, but is there anything kind of tips of the trade that you can give anybody?
I this may sound cliche, but never stop learning out there. It's things change so fast. So yeah, work hard and never stop learning. I just feel like I try to bring my brain with it with a relatively clean slate every day when I come to work, and what's new, what can I do, what are people looking at, so I would say understand the audience as much as you can through the audience's eyes, and which isn't you. I think when I was younger I had a hard time understanding that. I thought everybody was wanted the same thing as I did, but I think over time I just really, that's where I start all my content, is really trying to get in the user's head and try to figure out what they want. And it's because there's a lot of people out there looking for information. So I would say that just really try to think about what is missing and what the average sort of user wants.
Yeah, I agree. I think that being at the cutting edge is something. What's next? That's what I always try to ask myself there's handicappers literally posting their fucking pics on Snapchat and Snapchat only because it reaches a bigger audience of their thing, So if you can kind of see what the next thing coming is, and I always talk about there's somewhat of an art of being noticed, whether it's using hashtags. I mean, there's literal workshops and classes on how to gain followers or gain, a following on social media, but... Again, that's something for another thing, but I just wanted to kind of get somebody that's been in this business for as long as you have. And one last thing, where do places like Covers or like Odd Shark or ESPN Chalk or CBS Sportsline, any of these places kind of post jobs, or do you, do you know anything about that if somebody is looking for to get into this field?
I don't. I always found people. I got several people started in the industry around that I just found through networking. And honestly, I would, because that was my job as managing editor, was to find good talent. And I would find. There were a couple job boards around there, I think, for sports journalists. I don't know if they're still kicking around, but I would literally reach out to people. I like their writing, and they might mention Odds or something like that, and I would reach out to them. And so I got a ton of no's, a ton of people that didn't work out over the years, but just staying with it and having contact with them, I was just able to find people, and sometimes through other people, and it just worked out. It was a lot of work, but a lot of fun.
Yeah. Again, that's how it all goes back to networking. And again, there's the last thing I would tell people is be ready when it does happen, because it always happens quick. And if you finally do get somebody to read, say your favorite, your best piece that you've ever written, and you don't have more samples to back that up, and then, it sucks to squander an opportunity. And not to sound 8 Mile on you, but opportunity sometimes only does come once in a lifetime, Mm-hmm. So be ready for it when it does come, and kind of just have, make them say stop. Okay, you're sending us too much stuff. Have your best samples. If you do podcasting, have those, just have everything ready. And I think in today's day and age, again, talent will always win out, but
yeah, for sure.
But that's it, buddy. Thank you so much for coming on. Where can people find all of your great work?
You can find me at Oddshark, and you can find me on Twitter at Johnny Oddshark. So yeah, check it out.
Awesome, buddy. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, Christian. Good talking to you, man.
All right, and that will wrap things up. Again, special thanks to John Campbell of Odd Shark for coming on and kind of giving you guys a glimpse into what it takes to make it in the sports handicapping content world. I hope if you guys have any other questions in it, again, I'm not exactly at the point in my career that John is, but I know for a fact that both him and myself will be more than happy to help you guys in any way if getting into this field is something that is what you guys are looking to do. Again, I get this question a lot in my DMs. So I hope that kind of gave you a broad overview of some different outlets that are available to you and a place to get started. And that's all it is. And again, as I've touched on throughout this podcast, talent will always win out, and hard work will get you where you need to go. I really, truly believe that, especially in this field. So until next time, guys, thank you as always. Rate, subscribe, listen on iTunes. And thank you again. Again, next episode of Inside Vegas will be on Monday, so I will catch you guys then.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.